This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
And good afternoon, Rutherford County. We want to let you know that the first half of this show, and we're going to have Dr. Fred Rolliter on today, is brought to you by At Home Care. And that's Melissa Williams' business. And what she did, she decided that she saw so many people that were having to leave their homes because of sickness, and they were no longer able to take care of their homes anymore and the duties there. And she decided she'd do something about it. So right now, 24/7, at-home care will come into your home, take care of all your responsibilities, run errands for you, and you can just sit back and relax and enjoy life. And if that sounds good to you, call Melissa Warren at 713-4639 or pull them up on the internet, www.athomecaretennessee.com. And you can even go over to their business. It's at 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, and that's behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. Let's see, Dr. Fred, now what topic are we going to talk about? So we've talked before the show, we've talked about the Civil War, we've talked about history and a lot of events, we've talked about the Bible, and we've talked about moonshine. Which one had you rather focus on right now?
Let's start with the Civil War.
Okay.
And then we'll go to some of those others, okay?
Because your expertise is in the Civil War, and we had Dr. Michael Bradley on yesterday. He was from the university. He had the actually, he lives in Tullahoma now.
Right, and he taught at Motlow for many years.
He did, and received his doctorate at Vanderbilt. And a very interesting man, and I can't think of a subject that's more interesting to the people here than what went on in Murfreesboro in this area during that particular time.
Right.
And you were talking about there's going to be a historical event, or actually right now, some of the battles were just getting started or about to get started on this particular event.
Right.
Or on this day.
Today. 150 years ago today, General Albert Sidney Johnston is just about to finish moving about 40,000 Confederate troops into Corinth, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. Troops had lost at Fort Donelson. Nashville had been occupied. Murfreesboro had been occupied. Columbia had been occupied, and U.S. Grant had moved his troops down that west side of the Tennessee River to what Grant always said to Pittsburgh Landing for modern Tennesseans. He's just across the river from Savannah, Tennessee. He's about 10 miles north of the border of Mississippi, setting up there, planning to move into following the railroad line. That railroad line had been built by Stephen A. Douglas and the Illinois Central Railroad. Douglas is the Douglas of the Lincoln-Douglas debate. A senator from Illinois down through Paducah to Jackson, Tennessee, and split there. And one branch was headed towards New Orleans and the other towards Mobile. And he was planning to move down that branch towards Mobile, just headed for splitting Mississippi and Alabama, basically. And Johnston was moved into the way. Johnston, 8 days later, on April the 6th, Johnston's going to strike north at Grant and catch Grant completely by surprise. There is little that Grant could have done to protect himself from Johnston, but he should have been in a better defensive position. And he wasn't. And on the first day, April 6th, the Confederates drove the Union forces back badly. The battle gets called Shiloh because there's a little Shiloh Methodist church there sitting sort of right in the middle of where the battle occurred. It's way out in the country then, a little small country church. There's a replica there now, not a original. On the second day, Grant's able to get organized. He's able to bring in reinforcements. He counterattacks. He drives the Confederates backwards. And be honest with you, after a two-day battle, the Union forces and the Confederate forces are sitting exactly where they were before. In that sense, Shiloh's a draw. But the big problems there with Shiloh was that there were 23,000 killed and 15,000 wounded in the and the Confederates can't lose those types of numbers.
Right.
The Union forces with a much larger population in the North don't want to lose that those numbers, but they can replace them.
Okay.
Incidentally, there were more people killed at Shiloh than every single U.S. battle from the first battle of the Revolutionary War to the day before Shiloh put together.
Wow.
And all of a sudden, everybody who had started in the war about a year earlier, it's almost exactly a year into the war, knew that their original expectation was wrong. The original expectation on both sides was it would be quick, short, they could drive the other army away, capture the other capital city, and the war would get over quick. Well, it wasn't going to get over quick, and it was going to be very, very, very bloody, and they realized it. There are a couple of interesting things out of Shiloh that people might be interested in. One sort of personal. My great-grandfather was there in the 19th Alabama.
Wow. Was he on the right side?
Of course. Down here, he was on the right side.
Right.
19th Alabama was very Confederate.
Okay.
And it was on the point of the counterattack at the on the second day, and about 85% of the 19th Alabama was killed that morning of April the 7th. My great-grandfather survived, lived long enough that he lived until my father was 9 years old.
Wow.
You know, I mean, he was living with his son and thus with my father, and my father remembers somebody asking him, well, how did you survive? And he laughed and said, I was up early, I was fixing breakfast, I saw them coming, I saw a hole under a tree, and I lived to survive another day.
Smartest man out there.
That's right. And since he didn't have any children at that time, I'm real glad about that, if you think about that idea.
If you think about it, you know, strategically, they made a lot of errors back then. I mean, it really wasn't a well-planned war at all, anywhere you look. And, of course, the information that they received was spotty, probably, at best, as to what they were looking at.
Yeah. Well, Albert Sidney Johnson was killed on the afternoon of the first day of that battle because they didn't have any radio. They didn't have any satellites or planes to do their spotting. And so he was riding reasonably close to the front lines and got hit by a stray bullet and bled to death. A modern general would never be that close to the front lines. The
South did not use their homeland advantage very well, did they? Because it seems like that a lot of the fighting during that war was British style, where it was just numbers against numbers. And if you go into another country and you're fighting there, you have to really do a lot of adapting to that particular area where they know it. I mean, they've lived there. They know every spot in that territory and what to be able to use and not to use.
The biggest problem in the Civil War simply was that they fought the war by the rules of the last war.
Right.
That's what we do with almost every war. The brilliant general who really makes a difference is the one who can adapt to the current conditions. Sometimes wars never have that. Now, the cavalry commanders, whether it's Forrest for the Confederates or any of Sheridan or any of the others for the North, adapted pretty well. They adapted to maneuver, to rapid movement, that sort of thing. But the idea of fighting a war, a battle is a better term, fighting a battle where you have fairly good-sized troops on each side at that time was to line them up and have a mass charge. Well, if you're facing, as they did with Napoleon Bonaparte, which is there, that's the strategy they were following, Bonaparte from 1798 to 1815, muskets, which are accurate at 40 to 50 yards at best and can't be reloaded by the time the other line gets there, so it's a one-shot situation, then goes to bayonet fights. That's one thing. But when you end up with people shooting rifles accurate at 400 yards that can be reloaded at least once in that length of time, and then you get the Sharps rifle coming in 1858, which is a four-shot cartridge loading rifle, so they can get off eight shots maybe against the front line, that creates a much different situation. And then they had developed hollow ball cannon technology. In the old wars, the cannonball was solid shot. If it hit you, you were dead, obviously. But it could miss you an inch, and it might scare you to death, but it wouldn't harm you. What they simply did was mold a hollow ball, fill it with mini balls, just think metal marbles, and shoot it out there and put a secondary charge on it, and it exploded, and it just threw those shrapnel everywhere, and they could kill 100, 200 people with one shot, and mass infantry charges became suicide.
That's a, guys, unfortunately, it's a way to be heroic and everything, and you'll see a lot of people, and when your country needs you, of course, that's the first thing you want to do is sign up. But it was one of those things that was going to be full of glory and big events. And then when you see all your buddies being blown to pieces, it changes your opinion.
It changes opinions very rapidly. And furthermore, most of the time in that war and most of the time in any other war, you're not actually fighting. You're out there in the field, being cold, trying to haul that heavy pack around to where they tell you to, trying to eat and sleep and take care of yourself, and it's not glorious at all.
And most of the people that died of sickness instead of actually
in the Civil War
receiving wounds.
That's right. It's sickness more than anything else.
I can't imagine what those guys had to go through, but it was all over. It wasn't just in the field of battle, but here in the South, it was at home too. Everybody was suffering in that particular time.
Yeah, because
in Tennessee, as you were saying earlier, Tennessee was one of the worst that was affected by the war.
Yeah, 50% of all the battles in the war fought within the original boundaries of Virginia. We would say Virginia and West Virginia,
right.
But 25% in Tennessee. Why? It's right on the border with the North, with Kentucky, and there's seven routes to invade Tennessee, three railroads, one in West Tennessee, one the Louisville, Nashville, Chattanooga route, one in East Tennessee. That's the one route that didn't get used. Three rivers running for the North, the Tennessee, the Mississippi, the Cumberland, and a road through Cumberland Gap, which facilitates invasion from central Kentucky to East Tennessee. Tennessee is not only right on the border, but it's easy to get to, you know. And the result was that you had tremendous physical destruction in Tennessee. And yes, there are other parts of the South, certainly Virginia, that's the same way, and the Atlanta to Savannah to Columbia, South Carolina, and maybe Vicksburg area and New Orleans area. But there's an awful lot of the South. I mean, Texas, for instance, almost no battles, or northern Louisiana or central Alabama. You know, they just, you know, there's
a lot of AWOLs ended up in Texas, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, right. And of course, now my people did, but they wouldn't go AWOL, but it was a way to at least make a living.
But you think of Louisiana, they weren't really affected. Then Alabama wasn't hardly at all. And then
Florida, almost no destruction.
Yeah. And you think of all those states that seceded to join the South, and then really only about four states were really caught up in the battle as far as the destruction part of it.
Right, that's correct. An awful lot of destruction in four or five states, and the rest not caught particularly. Occasional battle, occasional areas of destruction, but not major widespread destruction. In the Murfreesboro area, Nashville area, almost every building is down or destroyed or badly harmed. There's not a single church in Nashville or Murfreesboro that was usable after the war.
That's amazing.
Because they turned them all into barracks or hospitals or something, and if they didn't get burned down like Harpeth Baptist Church did, which is the background of Eagleville Baptist Church, they burned, the Union forces burned Harpeth Baptist Church because it had been used as a Confederate hospital. But mostly they just simply got terribly abused, just became unusable.
You know, it was such a sad thing because Tennessee was one of those states. They really were right on the fence as to what they wanted to be true to their heritage, but they wanted to wanted the United States to remain as one. They wanted the Union to remain as one. But you were alluding to why that tipped over.
Well, in truth, just to prove that Tennessee was really wanting to remain a union, in the 1860 election, you had four major candidates. You had a Northern Democrat, a Southern Democrat. You had Abraham Lincoln for the Republicans who won. But you also had John Bell running for a Constitutional Union Party, and the whole idea of that party is to hold the country together. And he won Tennessee, North Carolina, and Virginia. Hmm. That's the three states he won.
Right.
More radical Deep South seceded, Tennessee's governor was Isham G. Harris out of Memphis. Mm-hmm. And Harris was pro-secession, and he called the Tennessee legislature into session in January 1861 to ask for secession. This is, and the legislature basically told him, no, thank you. They weren't interested.
Mm-hmm. By a fairly large vote.
By a big vote. And then they called a referendum for February the 8th, and that vote was 4-1 against secession. I mean, overwhelmingly against secession. But then the fighting starts, and Harris puts the Tennessee troops in the Confederate Army mm-hmm. on his own without authority of the legislature. And when the vote came again in June about secession, it was, it's 107,000 to 45,000. That's a little over 2-1
right.
for secession. There's an interesting thing about that. East of Middle Tennessee voted for secession. West and Middle Tennessee voted for secession. East Tennessee voted against secession. But and that's pretty well the way you think of it mm-hmm. Through the Civil War. But also in 1860, there had been a economic census as well as a population census. Mm-hmm. And they had, what they did was rate family, total family wealth. Mm-hmm. And the average East Tennessee counties had right at about $3,200 per family wealth. Now, that's a lot more purchasing power than now, but, it's
pretty good back then.
Pretty good back then. Yeah. But Middle Tennessee had $6,000 and West Tennessee had
$8,000. Wow.
But there are eight counties in Middle and West Tennessee that voted against secession, and they all were down. Hill County is down about the Tennessee area. Mm-hmm. So to some extent, the split in Tennessee was not only east versus the other two areas, pro-slave against anti-slave areas, but also to some extent poorer Tennessee against wealthier Tennessee.
Well, of course, we did have some wealthy landowners down through here.
Oh, yes.
When they averaged it out, that was just total.
That was the total. That was an average.
Yeah.
Obviously, we had people who were worth, in parts of Rutherford County and certainly over into Cannon County, who might not have had $1,000 worth of wealth, even if they owned their own land. But there were plenty of Rutherford County plantation owners who were worth a whole lots of money. Mm-hmm. In fact, after the Civil War, Andrew Johnson tried to get the federal government to basically disfranchise, take the vote away from all Southerners who had a pre-Civil War wealth of 20,000 or more. And that's where he thought plantation owners started.
And there he is,
started.
A Tennessean.
Yeah, and there he was, a Tennessean. Well, he was an East Tennessean. He was an East Tennessean. Now, he was a Democrat.
But it's so interesting as you look at it, and you and I were discussing this before we went on the show, Lincoln had to be under a great deal of stress at that time, because the war at first was popular on both sides up to a point.
Right.
But when all the casualties start coming in, your popularity starts to wane a little bit. And of course, we've seen it here in just about every war. As the death notices come in, it changes everybody's perspective.
Yes. There are two things that people forget when they get ready to go to war. One, it costs a lot of money.
Yes.
Every war costs a whole lot more money than anybody ever thinks it's going to. Okay. The second thing is people forget the casualties are going to start showing up.
Right.
And when the war costs start showing up and it drives the government in debt and the casualties start showing up, the popularity of the people at the top, including the president, begins to go down.
Right.
Because people are not happy with those two things. And they continuously were not happy. There's an interesting sidelight, just Rutherford County sidelight, to this Lincoln situation. Lincoln had decided by September of 62 to issue the Emancipation Proclamation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Emancipation Proclamation is a little trickier than most people think. It actually says, doesn't free any slaves of the time. It frees slaves when the Union Army moves into clearing an area they did not hold at the day it was issued. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
But he doesn't want to issue it until he gets a victory. Well, fall of 62, Lee over in Virginia is just eating the Union Army up. I mean, mm-hmm. they lose several battles. And the battle that let Lincoln issue the Emancipation Proclamation because he got his victory was the Battle of Stones River.
Yeah, the question I have is, for what reason did he not want to go ahead and issue it before the victory? What kind of repercussions would that have caused?
I'm not sure that we can tell you the exact repercussions, but it's political psychology. Mm-hmm. It looks like you're losing mm-hmm. if you're losing battles and issue that type of proclamation.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like you're winning if you issue it after a winning battle or two.
Sign of weakness?
It's a sign of weakness if you do it while you're losing battles.
I never looked at it that way.
You know, that's why he's holding up. Now, I have no way of telling you whether the public would have reacted that way or not. The one thing the Emancipation Proclamation did about Rutherford County in Tennessee was it didn't free any slaves in Tennessee because it wasn't in the area that it covered.
Mm-hmm.
But it allowed the recruitment of African-American troops for the United States Army.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of that happened, about 30,000 of them in Tennessee, in fact.
You know, with all the deaths and everything, and that was listed as one of the major causes of the war, of course, was slavery.
Right.
And I don't think anybody today could even imagine having slavery around.
Right.
But it took so long for them to actually be able to receive their full birthrights after the war. And I've always wondered why it was that way.
Basically, you've got a psychological situation going on here. The entire Southern social structure before the Civil War is based mm-hmm. on slavery.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Only 25% of the Southern families or so owned a slave, but of the other 75%, the great majority wanted to own slaves. I mean, you know, they agreed with slavery. The social structure is based on slavery. At the end of the war, wealthier Southerners would have been willing to go to a Northern-style social structure based on wealth.
Right.
But that was completely unacceptable to poorer Southerners
mm-hmm.
because the poorer Southerners could see themselves as being below African Americans, and that was just something that psychologically they could not accept. And the result is the appearance of what we call segregation.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Southern politicians realized that segregation, support for segregation, bought votes. Mm. And that added to it, because then you get laws supporting what had started somewhat informally.
Okay. It's hard from one generation to look back at another generation and put themselves in that place.
That's right. We sometimes just don't understand their thinking.
No. And we want to let you know that this portion of the show is brought to you by the Golden Coin Connection. And they're at 2568 South Church Street, and that's beside the Gateway Tire Center. And they also have a location at 5631 on the New Nashville Highway. And Pastor Larry Dunn of ERO Ministries and his partners Chris Chico and Wayne Everly buy scrap gold, jewelry, platinum, coins, and silverware. And they have vintage sports collectibles and great antiques. And if you want a fair and honest evaluation of your collectibles and some of your precious items, take them by and see Pastor Larry Dunn and his partners today. And that's at the Golden Coin Connection, 2568 South Church Street, or 5631 New Nashville Highway. And you can even call them before you leave. It's 890-2646.
Murfreesboro City Council election, the Murfreesboro Firefighters Association is proud to endorse incumbent Councilman Toby Gilley and challengers Bill Jakes and Eddie Smotherman. We also ask your support in our efforts to improve our radio system for first responder safety and to ensure planned construction of a fire training facility in Murfreesboro. Please vote for candidates Gilley, Jakes, and Smotherman for City Council. Early voting March 28th to April 12th, Election Day, April 17th.
Paid for by Murfreesboro Firefighters Association, local number 3035.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic is more than just a clinic. It's the doctors you can trust, a technician you can believe in, and a staff member who goes the extra mile. From the time someone walks in our doors, the difference becomes evident. All of our resources are used to improve the healthcare experience of our patients, and we have been a part of Rutherford and surrounding counties for over 60 years. Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
This is Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by the Omni Hut Restaurant in Smyrna, AmeriCare Pest Control, and the Rutherford Home Show, Saturday mornings at 11:30 on WGNS.
This is Dean Higby with South Branch Nursery. Join us Saturdays, 11:30 to 12:30 on the Rutherford Home Show, presented by Old South Properties.
This is Josh at South Branch Nursery. With cold weather here, now is the best time to plant most trees and shrubs. With a huge selection of bulk mulches, stone, and soil amendments, we're here all winter for your landscaping needs.
South Branch Nursery, located at Barfield Road and South Church Street, 893-4030, or on the web at southbranchnursery.com.
Let's check some Good Neighbor Events from WGNS. And if you live in the city limits of Murfreesboro, early voting for the city election now through April the 12th. You're voting for 3 Murfreesboro City Council members and 4 Murfreesboro City School Board members. Early voting is available at the Election Annex at 426 East Vine Street, over at SportsCom on Memorial Boulevard, and at Blackman Elementary School on Fortress Boulevard. In addition, you can early vote now at the Election Commission office on the south side of the Murfreesboro Square. Once again, early voting for the City of Murfreesboro elections now through April the 12th. And Election Day is Tuesday, April 17th. And your income tax will be prepared for free if your total family income is $50,000 or less. This is being done at 2 locations, one of them at the Greenhouse Ministries over on Spring Street. The other one's at the St. Clair Street Senior Center, and at that location, that's for persons age 60 plus only. And you do have to have an appointment at the St. Clair Street location. The Bible Reading Marathon is April the 29th through May the 3rd at the Bible Pathways Ministries on West Thompson Lane. Those are Good Neighbor Events.
I'm Connor Moss, and I approve this message. I chose Murfreesboro, and I love this town. I'm a proud MTSU alumnus, and I want to raise my family here. The city is experiencing challenges, and the city council is not representing you. Each of the incumbents has been there for at least a decade. It's time for new ideas and innovation. It's time for district representation and term limits. It's time to bring accessibility and responsible, honest government back to the community. I'd like the opportunity to be your voice on the city council. Early vote for me, Connor Moss, March 28th through April 12th. Paid for by the committee to elect Connor Moss.
Hi, this is Mike, owner of Maple Street Grill, inviting you to check out our new website, online ordering, and download our iPhone and Android app at maplestreetgrill.com and just click on the icon to download it free to your phone. Maple Street Grill at 109 North Maple Street in downtown historic Murfreesboro.
Weather Eye.
A blend of clouds and some sunshine develops this afternoon. Slight chance of showers and storms, high in the low 80s. Tonight, partly cloudy. Slight chance of a shower or storm, early low 58. I'm WGNS meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Right now, it's 79 degrees.
If you know someone who has gone the extra mile, nominate them to be Good Neighbor of the Day. Just send those nominations to news@WGNSradio.com or stop in our studios at 306 South Church Street.
The local conversation continues now on The Truman Show. Once again, here's Truman Jones.
And welcome back with Dr. Fred Rolliter. It's always fun when I'm on with you because you always have an interesting perspective on things, but it's always fun because you can make anything enjoyable, even the worst of things. We're talking about the Civil War. I can sit here and then listen to you all day when we're talking about
it. You know, it was not a pretty picture. No. You really wouldn't have wanted to be in the middle of it, but it's interesting to follow. And I never did think it was good to be too morbid about things. I really have fun out of situation.
You have to. Life is great, no matter what.
That's right. It's a whole lot better than not having life. You know?
But I wonder how great Lincoln was thinking life was after we got into the war and after some of the major battles. It is obvious that it wasn't going to be a year in the battle and it was going to be one. It was going to drag on and there were going to be a lot of bodies and a lot of damage in this country during that period.
You cannot believe modern political cartoonists often picture any political figure in a pretty unflattering way. You can't believe some of the things they call Lincoln. The key was most of them, the Democratic papers were calling him that gorilla.
Mm-hmm.
And given Lincoln's long, lean, lanky look, I mean, it was pretty easy to change that picture to sort of look like a gorilla. And Lincoln was having a political problem, a real political problem, about getting reelected. By the spring of 64, he was very worried. The war wasn't going great. You'd won back in the summer of 63, you'd won Gettysburg and Vicksburg. But after that period, those battles weren't going real good. The South was doing a pretty decent job of keeping the Union forces bottled up around Chattanooga. They weren't making progress towards Atlanta. Lee is giving them fits and with Fredericksburg and some other battles in Virginia. And so in the spring of 64, Lincoln made a decision. The only way he's going to get reelected is to get the Republican vote plus pro-war Democrats, because the Democrats were going to run a retired general named McClellan on a, they called it a peace Democratic candidate. I would call it more a compromise. Let's make a compromise with the South.
Now, you're talking about an interesting thing right now. Politics is still going on in the United States. Mm-hmm. Does every state still have representatives in Washington in how much effect are they while they're there?
Okay. The answer to you is that when the Civil War broke out, those states that had seceded to become part of the Confederacy, all of their representatives except five left Washington, D.C. Those five were Senator Andrew Johnson of Tennessee and districts 1 through 4 of Tennessee, which would be Johnson City, Kingsport, Chattanooga, sort of the both sides of Chattanooga. Okay.
For what reason did Johnson leave?
Johnson, those five stayed. They created a problem. What if you got a very close vote?
Right.
And they voted for or against the issue and to say the decision. Is that legal when Tennessee says it's not in the union?
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't take Lincoln long to get three of the four Tennessee representatives an administrative job and get them out of Congress. And one of them made the mistake of going back to check in at Knoxville and got thrown in the Confederate prison. But Johnson stayed in Washington, D.C., and Lincoln didn't quite know what to do with him. Okay. And he's actually operating in the Senate in 1861, early 62.
So Lincoln did not consider him an ally.
No. In fact, Lincoln worried about him there and took the advantage when Nashville was captured. Nashville was captured February 24th, I believe, but late February of 1862. And as soon as Nashville was captured, Lincoln names Johnson the military governor of Tennessee, and the main reason is just to get him out of Washington, D.C.
That's politics for you.
That's politics for you. It gave him a brigadier general's position and make him military governor and ship him to Nashville. He'd been a very effective civilian governor from 1853 to 57. In fact, he's the real founder of the public school system of Tennessee. It had been approved 20 years earlier, but it hadn't been funded, and he got very excellent funding. There were 3,000 public schools within 7 years, you know, the time he got the funding. Now, most of them would have been 1- and 2-room schoolhouses. They wouldn't have not been what we think of a big school, you know. But still, that's pretty fast. But as military governor, he had a hard time. But in spring of 64, Lincoln says, oops, I'm having a hard time. I'm worried about this Democrat. What can I do to win? Well, what I can do to win is get the Republican vote, which he pretty well had, plus pro-war Democratic vote. Okay, who's the most prominent pro-war Democrat? It's Johnson. So that's why Johnson's named the vice president. Lincoln simply changed vice presidents.
Now, the states that have seceded, or have ceded, did those citizens in those states, would they have gotten a vote during the next presidential election?
They would not have had a vote in the 1864 election, okay? Because technically none of those states had gone through Reconstruction, political Reconstruction, to re-enter the Union.
Okay.
That began in December of 64, January of 65. Tennessee is just about the first, and it set up a government in January of 65.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens is between January 65 and December 65, all 11 of the Confederate states set up new governments, saying they're loyal to the Union again. Now they elect representatives and senators and send them to Washington, D.C. And when they got to Washington, D.C. in December 65, which is the first time that Congress met after the war ended, the Congress absolutely refused to seat those people out of those 11 Confederate states, saying they had not properly been reconstructed.
Okay.
Now, let me tell you, there's a little key here. It is true that Congress probably thought the conditions Lincoln and Johnson had put on getting them back into the Union were too lenient. I agree with that, and Congress voted, to be sure, they voted for the 13th Amendment to outlaw slavery and the 14th Amendment, which was coming up to give citizenship rights to ex-slaves, to freedmen. But another point. Almost all of those incoming congressmen and senators are Democrats, and Congress is Republican controlled. And if they'd admitted the Democrats, the Congress would have switched to Democratic control, and they had no intention of that happening. And so they refused to seat them and put in further requirements for those states to get back in. And it takes from Tennessee in 66 to South Carolina, Louisiana, Florida, and all the way to 77 to get these states back in, and the other states are in between. Okay.
So an extraordinary event happened at that time when John Wilkes Booth, and you probably read the book, when he was planning and all the things that went that were involved in him assassinating Lincoln. Because of that one extraordinary event, Lincoln has been held to an esteem that you can't even touch, simply because of what happened. And in some ways, John Wilkes Booth made him bigger than life.
Yeah, he sure did. Three things made Lincoln's reputation. One, he had won the war. I mean, technically, or some Confederate units don't surrender till, say, Lincoln's assassinated in April, and some Confederate units don't surrender till June, July, but the war is basically over. And that's very, very different situation, say, than just a year earlier. Two, Lincoln becomes a martyr. And we see the same thing with Kennedy. He becomes a martyr. Right. And the martyrdom enhances the reputation. It takes away the bad parts and emphasizes only the good parts. The third thing that happened with Lincoln is however intriguing. Lincoln became the symbol of the Republican Party. Okay? And his reputation is polished well by the Republican Party and certain writers who support the Republican Party, and particularly in the, say, the first 50 years after the Civil War. He's a very useful symbol for them for winning elections.
But you think about politics and how it's been structured and how the structure has changed over the years. It's sometimes it almost seems like the parties flip-flop in what their policies are sometimes. And sometimes I wonder if when we vote, should we be voting for a party or should we be voting individually for what we really feel like that we want the country to be. You know, that's always a tough decision because you have individuals that are controlling what the platforms are going to be in each party.
Yeah. The best theory answer is you vote for the individual whose ideas are closest to yours, okay? And if you're looking probably at anything like a president or a U.S. senator or a U.S. representative or perhaps occasionally Tennessee state senators or representatives, you can pretty well ascertain that. You can pretty well be sure one or the other is closer to you. When you get the closer you get to your local government, the less policy is often involved in decision making, and it's probably harder and harder to choose on policy. Then you tend to choose on personality, and that may or may not be the best choice. It obviously was the best choice of Rutherford County Sheriff for a while, but anyway. But it is quite true that what happens in policy decision-making among political parties is often controlled by strategists who are either not elected or who, for whom you as an individual have no vote. They may be a senator from Pennsylvania, or they may be a representative from Alabama or something, who's making that strategy, and the person in Tennessee has no vote for them. And thus, parties sometimes stay true to their policies for a long period, but it actually is more true that parties tend to move in practical politics.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break and let you know that this portion of the show with Dr. Fred Rotter is brought to you by Stan McNabb, and they provide quality vehicles from Chevrolet, Dodge, Jeep, Ford, and Cadillac to the Murfreesboro, McMinnville, and Shevel, Tennessee area. Their large selection ensures that they have a vehicle for everyone, no matter what it is you're looking for. And for a quality used car in Tullahoma, visit their dealership located at 2000 North Jackson Street. They have a large inventory of pre-owned cars, trucks, SUVs, and minivans to select from. At Stan McNabb Automotive, they pride themselves in the quality that they offer on all of their used cars, which makes them a major destination for used vehicles.
Hi, I'm Don Patterson, an internal medicine physician with Middle Tennessee Medical Group, a new multi-specialty office dedicated to the health and well-being of you and your family. Our physicians provide expertise in family and internal medicine, as well as other specialties. Middle Tennessee Medical Group offers two locations in Murfreesboro for your convenience. To make an appointment with a Middle Tennessee Medical Group physician, call 396-6800 or visit middletnmedicalgroup.com.
It's time for the 2012 season of Atlanta Braves baseball. And this season will be the last for a Braves Hall of Famer. We thank Chipper for an amazing career in Atlanta and are ready to make his final season something special.
It's been a pleasure for the last 20 years to be able to try and entertain you. And I wouldn't have wanted to play for any other fans than you.
This is the home of the Braves.
The Braves. Yeah, we got them. WGNS, Murfreesboro.
I'm in a state of inundation from an endless iteration of discounts that State Farm gives to me. Good driver and good student, multi-car and all the rest make up a veritable litany. They got a list of discounts longer than my arm. Get to a better state, State Farm.
Call Good Neighbor State Farm agent Mel Adams at 893-6822.
Did you know that Sprint now carries the iPhone? This is Melanie Davenport at Sprint by Cellular Concepts. So if you've been tied to your iPhone and another carrier, maybe it's time to shop us. Let us do a bill analysis for you to compare your rates. We have great rates and great devices and local service. We have three great locations, the corner of Main and Middle Tennessee, next to the Boulevard Restaurant, behind Red Robin, next to the hospital, and also in Smyrna in the Target Center on Sam Ridley Parkway. Sprint by Cellular Concepts.
This is Councilman Ron Washington, and I'm asking for your vote April 17th. I have proven my commitment to this community through volunteerism, service, and your trust. Serving a community is not just local involvement, it's regional and national. Experience matters. Vote Ron Washington, City Council. Early voting is March 28th through April the 12th. Election day is April 17th. I am Ron Washington, and I approve this message.
Margaret and John Lockhart are our good neighbors of the day for today, Thursday, March 29th. Again, Margaret and John Lockhart. Today they'll receive free flowers, compliments of Ryan's Flower Shop, located at 117 South Academy Street.
We're at the Garden Patch Thrift Store on Spring Street across from the tall NHC building, talking with Christy Sanford.
Instead of it just being rows and rows of just shirts and pants, we try to make it more in sections, so we'll have like a houseware section, and we try to set up more display areas.
Donations to the Garden Patch Thrift Store and proceeds from sales help fund Greenhouse Ministries, a faith-based nonprofit helping underserved in our community.
We are located at 309 South Spring Street,
across from the tall NHC building.
Now more of The Truman Show with Truman Jones on WGNS AM and FM.
Welcome back with Dr. Fred Rolliter. And a lot of people don't realize that you have been on a number of missions in your life, and you and Jeanette, and Korea is one of your favorite places to go.
Absolutely.
You have spent a lot of time there.
We
with
spent 6 years there in Korea, living in the city of Daejeon, which is 90 miles south of Seoul. Used to life about the missionaries and the other Westerners in Seoul. You could get by with English. most everybody spoke some English, and all the signs had English on them. And Dejon, you'd better know some Korean, because you were in trouble otherwise. You probably couldn't eat.
Now, you've got a country there that has been divided.
Oh, yes, very much.
Over war.
Yes.
And it goes all the way back, I think, of in the 50s.
It was actually divided at the end of World War II, mm-hmm. when the U.S. came in. Japan held Korea from 1906 to the end of World War II.
Right.
The Russians invaded from the north, the U.S. invaded from the south, and they split the country,
mm-hmm.
Along what was called the 38th parallel, and agreed to keep it split. Then you got the Korean War, and it ended up with a boundary that doesn't run, it runs close to 38th parallel, not exactly that.
Right.
And it has remained split, and it's still split, and there's still problems. And even today, President Obama has said that we'll help the North Koreans out with some food they need, and then the North Koreans announced they're going to do a satellite launch, which looks like a launch for a testing of a long-range missile, and he says, no, we're not going to help you out. I mean, it is a major problem.
Is Korea, South Korea, we're talking about.
Yeah, right.
How do they feel? I mean, you have had a great relationship with those people. How do they feel about people in the United States?
In general, South Koreans are very favorable to the United States. There is a political party called the Liberal Political Party, which plays to some extent on hostility towards the U.S., and when you have, through most of the time, between 30 and 40,000 troops there. I think it's 28,005 now.
Mm-hmm.
And these sometimes are in the way. It creates some problems. But truthfully, I have walked through anti-American demonstrations, mm-hmm. in both Seoul and Daejeon, and been invited to join. I've just laughed and said, I don't think so. As an American, I probably shouldn't. They said, oh, go on, that's fine. You know, mm-hmm. they weren't hostile at all towards me or my wife. You know, mm-hmm. they were doing a political thing, you know, and, you know.
In politics there, are they really divided that much as far as the people are concerned between North and South? Or is it basically the leadership in the North that seems to be causing the major problem?
I think that probably the best answer to you is that the leadership in the North has, since the end of World War II, fed the people a line that North Korea is a great place.
Mm-hmm.
That most of the people in the North agree with that, but they would be probably like the East Germans, eager to join with the South just as soon as they could get that opportunity. And they know they will be better off in spite of what the North tries to brainwash them with. They understand they're not as far advanced.
Do they understand why the troops are there and they're there for their protection?
Do the South Koreans,
right,
understand?
South Koreans
yeah. do understand that pretty well. They sometimes, when it gets calm with North Korea, then South Koreans' attitude was, well, we don't need those American troops anymore, so they should go home. But anytime there's any difficulty with the North, the South Koreans are very happy to have them.
Do they still have a major influence from China there in North Korea?
In North Korea, yes. That's the only thing that probably pulls North Korea anywhere close to the modern world. I mean, China is an evolving modern economy now, and the North Koreans learned something about it.
I believe, in talking to you over the years, you could live in Korea and be happy.
Oh, yes. My wife and I could live in Korea and be very happy. I'll assure you we could.
That's amazing. Well, I believe you could be happy anywhere. Everywhere I've ever known you, we have fun. And you're one of the best classroom teachers in church that I have ever seen. You really are. You just bring it alive and make it so much fun. I can't wait to get to Sunday school when you're there.
Well, thank you very much. And we want to be sure you get there on time.
Well, sometimes that's hard to do. And we'll see you guys tomorrow at 2:00. And we have Clyde Atkinson on tomorrow from the Murfreesboro Police Department, and we're going to be talking about law enforcement. See you tomorrow.